Greetings, friends. My name is Jessa McLean, and I'm here to provide you with some blueprints of disruption. This weekly podcast is dedicated to amplifying the work of activists, examining power structures, and sharing the success stories from the grassroots. Through these discussions, we hope to provide folks with the tools and the inspiration they need to start to dismantle capitalism, decolonize our spaces, and bring about the political revolution that we know we need. Good morning. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Hi, good morning. Yes, I am an activist and an organizer with the Indigo Kills Kids campaign.
That's a pretty inflammatory name for a campaign.
It's the truth.
It is the truth. It is the truth. And I think folks will agree with us by the time we get done with this episode. But why did you name your campaign Indigo Kills Kids? Without getting into the details, I mean, like we talked about before we recorded, language matters.
Yeah.
And we try not to be inflammatory or, you know, appeal to a broad audience. But I mean, that's knee jerk right there.
Well, we want people to stop and think, and we want people to ask the question. Like when you hear the phrase Indigo Kills Kids, the idea is like, why? What do you mean Indigo Kills Kids? It makes you ask questions. And that's what we want people to do. We want you to ask, we want you to think critically, and we want you to dig deeper.
Because yeah, most people, when they think about indigo, it's very bright, spacious books. It feels like some of the only places you can buy books. They got a great kids section, right? It totally jives with the branding that they're trying to put out there. That's for sure. I don't imagine its major shareholder, Heather Reisman, appreciates the title. Have you faced a lot of backlash?
I mean, of course, yes. I'm right out of the gate. We were served with a cease and desist within 2 weeks of the campaign launching. That was followed up when we ignored it because we don't need people telling us what to do, let alone lawyers. 2 weeks later, we received a series, like back to back to back, we received a series of legal notices, including a lawsuit claiming copyright infringement, suing for damages, which then they leveraged to enforce an injunction on our website and to have us to have the site blocked. In Canada, they also put in a request with, in Canada, we have like the domain police. And in the US, ICANN and the Canadian version, they put in a complaint there saying that the URL will cause confusion and there's too much likeness. And effectively, they scooped both domains, which in my opinion, is hilarious, because if you look up on like the DNS, or if you do like a who is lookup on indigokillskids.com, the owner is Indigo Books. So, I mean, it's just
that I maybe didn't look the way that they wanted it to look.
Yeah. Yeah. The optics are brilliant. And this campaign is about optics. It really, really is about optics. We have a billionaire who has a massive corporation whose husband owns himself massive corporations and is a primary owner in this corporation as well. And they're viewed as like this, you know, all Canadian couple, so to speak. And here they are literally funding hundreds of millions of dollars and funneling it, using it as a sort of money laundering almost methodology of getting money into Israel. They're using Canadian tax dollars and our charity system to funnel money into Israel and into their military specifically, which is committing a genocide. So it's just this darling Canadian optics look is BS.
Okay, we can't brush over the foundation like that, though. Mm-hmm. It's way worse.
It's a big topic.
I mean,
kills kids and funding a genocide, but like it's just way worse than that too, right? So let's get into the foundation that Reisman founded and spearheads. And I'd also like to paint that picture that you started to, but let's fill it in a bit, on this Canadian couple, but they're oligarchs. Like when we talk about Canadian oligarchs, this is one of them. It's not just even about a bookstore. Reisman's family has ties to politics, long ties to politics, Paul Martin as prime minister. And, you know, later on we'll talk about the Indigo 11 and the role she says she didn't play there. And so a lot of political power, right? But this foundation that's at the heart of the boycott, really, right, is how you were able to say that they definitively kill kids, is really tied to that Lone Soldier program. Do you want to go into it? I have been brushing up on it this morning, but I imagine you have been talking to people about this for a long time now. So what is this Lone Soldier Foundation, and what's so wrong with it, right? It's a charity. The Canadian Revenue Agency still recognize its charitable status, right? Mm-hmm. People are working on that. A lot of people are working on that, yes. But it's a charity.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everyone pulls on the heartstrings. Oh, well, and that's her line. You know, she changes her line every 5 minutes, or, you know, oh, they're helping veterans, and like, how dare we? And like, oh, they're helping orphans, how dare we? Well, let's talk about what, you know, the Hetzig Foundation is. So the Hetzig Foundation is a charity. The foundation basically has scholarships for lone soldiers. It's a scholarship fund for lone soldiers. And lone soldiers are foreign nationals who join the Israeli military. So we're talking, they can come from anywhere, but lone soldiers can come in three ways. They can either go to Israel and join the IOF for a short period of time. They do their service, but they don't get citizenship. Some of them do go and get citizenship. And the last category, which is the smallest of the three, is that it's people who don't, who are either orphaned or have been isolated from their family in Israel. So that's the one that she likes to lean heavily on. But the fact is that the organization gives scholarships to keep people in Israel after they have completed service in the Israeli military. And then we can talk about what all the different things that the Israeli military is doing, from dispossession, from killing children, quite literally. They are in Gaza killing children. They are killing children in the West Bank. I mean, to claim that Indigo, or the CEO, the primary shareholder, is not funding this genocide is a ridiculous notion. At the end of the day, if you're putting money into a charity, you're getting a tax break on that. You're sending it, you're giving it specifically to people, you're paying people who are then using, who have now killed people, killed children. And on the other hand, your hypocrisy is disgustingly on display, because here in Canada, you're promoting literacy, you're promoting, you know, you've got this beautiful kids section, you're creating this experience where Indigo has been really personal for a lot of people. But then on the flip side, you're literally destroying education in Gaza, you're destroying, you know, history and lives there. So it's really an inflammatory thing for them to even claim that they're not having a hand in this genocide. And so I think it's just, Hetzig is a big problem. Like, why are we funding lone soldiers, and why are we funding Canadians to go and fight in Gaza?
Yeah, we're funding them in two ways, right? Through the tax donations that are our tax dollars. And then, I mean, if you're still shopping at Indigo, you're funding it that way by lining the pockets of these oligarchs who are on this fucking mission. But one of the things about the Lone Soldier program that I think really irks me, because we've had refuseniks on the show, you know, Israelis are conscripted into the IOF, the IDF. They don't have to go. They can go to prison
instead.
They're
making a choice.
Yeah, they can make a choice, but there is conscription. The lone soldier, no wonder she leans in on the domestic soldiers, the orphans, but it's the encouraging people who are not legally obligated to participate in the genocide whatsoever and luring them with money and gifts and possible citizenship. So she's and doing this from Canada, right? So she's recruiting and funding a foreign army from other places in the world as well as Canada and sending them over. And then, like, the bonus is then the genocide, right? Like, this was an issue for people in 2010, right? Like, as the genocide has been continuous, the ethnic cleansing has started at the Nakba. We understand that. But, like, this opposition to Reisman and the Hetzik Foundation and the Lone Soldier Program predated October 7th. But now it just seems incredible that their charitable status hasn't been revoked. I found some numbers here. I'm sure you have some too, but I thought, like, just to give people an idea, the foundation that Schwartz and Reisman, that's the couple there, have provided to the foundation is $185 million over the past, I think, 5 years. And
the average... They average about $5 million a year. So over a lifetime, they've actually sent about almost $200 million to Hetzik. So it started in 2006, the organization. And so they've been slowly funneling money in. But over the last, and over the last 5 years, it's like it's had an uptick and they average about $5 million.
Does that come from her profits at Indigo?
I mean, surely. That's like her primary business. I mean, it's their foundation. So everything goes into the Reisman Schwartz Foundation. It is 40%. Like if you look at how funds are distributed from the Reisman Schwartz Foundation, and I'll be honest, the experts in this is Just Peace Advocates. They've done so much incredible work around this and there's amazing documentation around this that they've pulled. They've done freedom of information requests from CRA, and they've compiled a lot of really great information, but effectively they've sent over $300 million to Israel in various capacities. And if you look at that, like 185, I mean, that's a big chunk of it going straight to Hetzik. So they heavily favor Hetzik in their donations when they're funneling money that way. Sorry for interrupting.
No, the clarification was important. And I think like it just helps justify the boycott, right? As well as the, you know, quote unquote, inflammatory language that you used to kind of catch people's attention and ask about this. Because I think it horrifies people once they realize, because mainstream media, you know, way back when, November 2023, some activists through Washable, I'm always reminded by a friend, that was Washable red paint and posters on the outside of an Indigo bookstore. We lovingly refer to them as the Indigo 11 now. And I mean, that was, I don't know if that was like the kickstart of the campaign, but quite early on, people targeted Indigo as a pressure point. Do you want to speak about the Indigo 11? Because I think it helps demonstrate the politicization of Reisman. She's not just a bookstore owner who happens to, you know, fund charities that have questionable outcomes. She is a Zionist. She supports this genocide and seemingly the criminalization of anybody trying to stop it.
Absolutely. I mean, she's litigious to the core, and that was, you know, something that we factor in when we organize against her. I think that, so the Indigo 11, we're not connected to the Indigo 11, and, you know, they have their own legal legal situation that we didn't want to taint. We wanted, you know, they need to be able to go through that. And they were able to overcome that. But yeah, so they threw the paint, they put the posters up, there were late night raids, it was national news. And the other interesting part was, you know, and maybe you want to speak to this as well, is, you know, the direct call to the TPS chief and the Toronto police chief, and being able to get on the line with the Toronto police chief and have that discussion and push this investigation forward, which then, you know, to criminalize and harm these activists who were longtime activists. And one of the things I will say, like, I want to say though about this, you mentioned earlier, was that that this is a pressure point. In 2006, when the organization was founded, HESEG, the foundation was created. There were a number of old Jewish ladies that used to stand outside the Bay and Bloor location every Friday. So right when it started, the Jewish community was holding Indigo to account, was holding Heather to account out there every Friday, speaking out against this. And so, you know, I think it's been, for those who have been part of the Palestine movement, the Palestinian Solidarity Movement, they've known about this. And there's very few, you know, Canadian targets that we can really lay into at this level. Like, there's lots of American, there's lots of British, there's lots of multinational, but very few that have this type of visibility and have this type of power and that are Canadian. And when we talk about that proximity to power, we also have to, so she has this direct line to TPS. We know that she, you know, rubs shoulders with political elites, and they all do. I mean, her husband also owns WestJet. And we also found through email leaks recently that she was in direct contact with Benny Gantz, and she was she funded and supported an anti-BDS like online cyber campaign and cyber attacks. So she's not just some, you know, Canadian, just some lady, some rich white lady. She has direct lines to power, and she wields that power, and she wields it to stomp on anything that would harm Israel and harm her business.
Yeah, I am going to speak to that call to the police chief a little bit. I mean, we know she was able within hours, you know, to have access to the police chief, made two points of contact. And the way the Toronto police reacted to that paint and posters was unreal. So within days, hate motivated charges were added. In the end, 10 night raids. So, you know, middle of the night, people were dragged out of their homes wearing what they were wearing when they were in bed. Their homes were turned upside down, their devices taken from them. They were given ridiculous, unconstitutional bail conditions, not allowed to speak to each other. Many of them lost their jobs and still do not have employment 2 years later. I just recently hosted an event to raise money for the Toronto Community Justice Fund, and they were speaking there. 70 officers went to arrest these folks. Like, you're talking about, like, gangs and drug officers showed up.
Completely disproportionate.
Yep, and not one criminal conviction after millions spent. They weren't all fully kind of cleared until March 2025. So a year and a half of legal drama plus, you know, probation or whatever comes, because the way that the system works, but in the end, no criminal convictions. But that response, a judge did rule that she did not have any impact on the case whatsoever. There's no other way for me to reconcile that kind of such early heavy-handed response. We've seen it since, but they just came out fully swinging after that. And, those are dots people can connect themselves, I think. So what's it feel like then when, like, you have all of this information? Oh, wait, no, I have one more little thing to get people riled up. I've got a little note there that I just, you know, there's so many moments where I was just like, no, they didn't. But, you know, you have to go back to 2009 to Operation Cast Lead. Okay, this is where it, heavy bombardment of the Gaza Strip, and 1,400 Palestinians were martyred. And what did the foundation do? It sent $160,000 worth of gifts to soldiers who took part. This is the kind of, like, literally rewarding them for killing children. So I don't know if, I imagine Indigo Books in this gift basket. I know that probably isn't what happened, but this is what I envision. This is how fucked up. And you have all of this, right? You have all the, you might have not have had that great tidbit, but you have all of this knowledge. Yeah, you save that for another time. But, and then people are still coming at you with really pathetic defenses, you know, why you shouldn't be boycotting Ingo. I mean, forget about Inconvenience, because it is hard to find another bookstore. Maybe we can link something to the episode for folks to replace it. But I mean, that framing that initially started as it was anti-Semitic, like, how does that feel, having to feel that ridiculousness knowing what you know?
You know, it's the Hezbollah, right? It's the propaganda, and it's the default setting for folks when they hear that you're going after Indigo and she's a Jewish woman and therefore you're anti-Semitic. Like, how could you go against it? And, you know, first of all, across the country and even in our organizing group, we have people with Jewish backgrounds. We have people with Muslim backgrounds. We have people with, like, you know, like LGBTQT, like, we have a variety of people. Like, if one thing Indigo is doing, it's bringing people together to hate on them because they, yeah, they suck. And when we're talking about this critique of anti-Semitism, we have to go back to this concept around, you know, the fact that they're oligarchs. They're not some small mom-pa-run deli or mom-pa run, you know, small business. They are a massive, they are a corporation. They are a massive corporation that makes like millions and millions of dollars. And so, you know, we have to put them into that context. And we also have to remember, we can switch out their identity for anything. They don't have to be Jewish. They could be anything. They could be atheist. It doesn't even matter. It's irrelevant.
They are billionaires.
What their identifiers?
Pardon? That's good. They are billionaires.
They're billionaires.
We don't like billionaires.
I mean, at the end of the day,
billionaires.
Like, eat the rich. Like, what are we doing? What are we doing? Giving them more money in general. Like, even just as a society that's trying to support each other and build community, like, they are not there to build community. And I always find it really funny when we have the criticism about, like, how could you be going after this, like, you know, this Canadian, this person that's like, you know, she's got so many credentials and she's so important to us. And I'm like, you know, it's fun when I literally had a train of thought and it got completely derailed. But at the end of the day, like, we are talking about a billionaire. We're not talking about our community. We need to be, and that's what I was going to say. Like, we need to be promoting our community. We need to be pushing small bookstores. We have people in our community, our neighbors, literally, that we could be supporting. We could be helping. And there are other options. Like, we can talk about the other options that exist. But at the end of the day, like, just at a base level, let's take away the identity. She's a billionaire. She's funding a foreign military. And she's a hypocrite, why? And she's highly litigious. And so if she really cared about the people, like, you know, why not engage in a discourse? And quite frankly, she's lying about what her organization does as a PR stunt to, like, reframe.
Speaking of stunts, before Christmas of 2025, I knew it was going to happen, but it was so fun to watch online. And I texted a friend that I knew would have been downtown. I said, did you go shopping at Indigo yesterday? And their response was, well, just to return something. let's talk about that, because I did love that. You love that. It's not just a boycott, right? You folks are finding other ways to interrupt business as usual.
Yeah, we want to disrupt. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what we want to do. And we have to remember that, well, on one hand, they're highly litigious, and we don't want to, there is an open lawsuit as well. So trying to, you know, we don't want them to also attach any financial dollar value to things. But at the end of the day, we want to disrupt. We want to make doing business like uncomfortable. And at the end of the day, like something like an economic boycott in this way can really make an impact. So I can give you some background. So in case folks don't know what that action was, we based it on there was like an anti-ice action that happened in the US where they had those ice scrapers at Home Depot. They all went to Home Depot. They purchased 17 cents ice scrapers, and then they all queued up and returned these 17 cents. Ice scrapers in protest of Home Depot's, you know, complicity with ice and so on and so forth. So looking at that, we were talking about ways that we could potentially model something similar and how we could have an impact. And we've discussed over the last year and a half, like with various organizers across the country, you know, actions around, or people have independently returned books, they've gone and they've purchased books. Or a core component of the campaign is really just to waste time, because time is money. How do we communicate with corporations? We communicate with corporations with money, by using money. And if we want their behavior to change, we need to affect the things that are important to them. And what affects what's important to them is money. So things like bookmarking and stickering are ways to impact their money. It's not damaging their product, but it's a nuisance. They have to go, they have to peel these stickers off that say Heather picks genocide, or they have to peel stickers off that say like 50% off genocide. And we're not doing anything they're not doing. They have the same stickers on their books. We often stick them on top of their stickers. So it's not that they can't remove them. It's that they have to go through and remove them. And so this is time and this is money. In the same way that folks have lined up and they'll go to the till, and at the end they'll just say, actually, you know what, Indigo kills kids, I'm not really into this, and they'll walk away. So they'll waste time that way. And this was another way of wasting time and creating a backlog. So if we think about not just the returning of the books and how that mess. So what we did, let me take a step back. What we did was we got folks to purchase books at any Indigo. And then the idea is you can return at any Indigo. And then the idea was basically to queue up and return. And some people, and to create a backlog to kind of bottleneck things. And on a day, they had a book signing that day. It's like the busiest shopping day of the year. It's the Saturday, the weekend before Christmas, is the busiest shopping day of the year. And so we create a bottleneck, and a number of things, outcomes can happen. People can get frustrated and walk away. So that's a loss. Purchasing and returning, the numbers are going to show there's like an hour and a half of time on the busiest shopping day of the year in a retail space where every hour counts, and you've just literally gave them zero sales in that hour. In fact, you've probably given them negative sales because you've returned things. And so now you're messing with their inventory system. You've got the time that it takes for them to have to reshelve all those books. You've got people looking for books that they can't find because they've been pulled off the shelves because they've been returned. So all of these things, you know, one of the critiques that was shared with us was, you know, oh, like what's $3,000, like whatever, that's a drop in the bucket. I was like, and we have to think of it, it's more than just the dollar value of the books. It's everything else that goes into running a business that costs money.
Okay, yeah. And to that critique as well, one, you never know what drop is going to overflow the bucket. We talk about that a lot. The smallest movements, you just never know. You will never know. You might not even know after it happens that that was the drop. that counted. But we all saw this action. This was really bad PR for Indigo, right? Because these lineups kind of brought a little bit more attention to the boycotts. It was a big deal. So that, you know how hard it is to break the algorithm and get your word out and get the message out? I mean, trust me, we had someone ask that last night in the photography course, right? How do you then make sure as many people see your images? And it's like, well, sometimes it means being disruptive, being a pain in the ass, and that is very valuable. So what do you say, though, to Reisman's most recent kind of pivot away from her identity as the target to these kinds of actions hurt retail workers? You're attacking retail workers. And, like, that's, like, we can laugh, but, like, we've heard this critique before we've seen folks do, like, fill up grocery carts and leave them. Because Galen Weston, we hate Galen Weston. I don't even know what religion he is. We hate him just because he makes our groceries too much money, and that's enough for me. It's
a religion of billionaires and money, and that's what it is.
Well, then they'll protect that under the fucking charter, right?
Yeah.
But I would like to, let's hit that, though, because it's not an uncommon critique of when we go to retail outlets and cause a disruption.
Sure. I mean, I love to talk about all the union busting that Heather does and the stores that she specifically closed down due to union busting, or the way that she, by union busting at one location, what they did was they just hired a bunch more part-time people and, like, forced people to either quit or, you know, I mean, to claim that this is about, like, workers' rights, what a comical response. And I'm sorry, you pay people minimum wage, like, girl, get fucked. Like, that's their job. You pay them. Like, if we weren't vandalizing anything, you know, we didn't damage goods. There was no red, like, I saw someone back a couple of years ago, somebody in, I think in Calgary, they dragged, like, red paint through the store. Nothing like that. Pardon?
Not judging.
Yeah. There's,
it's just an accident.
But at the end of the day, you know, we have to look at it. And what did we do? We lined up. And as customers, we're entitled to. Are we not? Are we not entitled to purchase and change our minds? Are we not entitled to, like, and it's part of our charter rights for expression. We are allowed to disrupt. We are allowed to protest. It is our duty to do this. And I find it comical that the ones who critique with, like, this is about workers are not people that are out there with the unions. They're not the ones actually supporting any sort of workers' rights, or, you know, they're the same people that are like, you know, get a job, you know, when you're out there protesting. They're the same people that are, you know, that are really actually anti-worker themselves. So it's not anything out of the realm of what these people, of what the workers do on a day-to-day basis. It's just scaled up.
Yeah, scaled down. And I imagine the folks partaking in these actions don't take it out on the workers. No. I mean, as an organizer, we usually make that explanation, right? You know, like, when you're calling MP's office and you know it's a staffer that's likely going to take your message, like, we do not chew them out. We do not, you know, make it their problem because they've been put in between us and our opponents.
100%. Yeah. And, you know, that's a big part of the campaign is actually, like, reminding folks that we're here to educate. That is our primary responsibility. And I think we have moments and we see this, right, where we see folks where we're upset. We're almost 3 years, 2.5 years in, 3 years in, we're exhausted. People are frustrated. I know at these actions, you know, CEJA loves to have their boycott that counters, which is, like, also just fun to make fun of. But overall, you know, there's a lot of counteraction that comes at the people that are running these actions. And so I know it's easy for folks to get worked up. It's easy for them to get heated. I've seen stuff where people, you know, maybe have heckled folks as they've entered the store. And one of the things that at a national organizing level, what we try to remind folks is, you know, it amazes me how many people just don't know about the Indigo boycott. It's one of the most common responses when you talk to people and you're educating them and you say like, and you engage with them on why we're boycotting Indigo. Many of them are like, oh, I had no idea. They become quite surprised. So it's incredible how many people still are unaware. And so I think that that's one thing to remember, that as organizers, like, we really want to be bringing people into the movement. And we really want to be bringing people, keeping that door open and keeping that, pardon me, that conversation going with folks. And so it's really important to remember that, one, when we're out there, how we present ourselves or like how we engage with people, including the workers, you know, in order to get people to come and join the boycott, join the movement and like, you know, whatever your gateway boycott, so to speak, and get your foot in the door. And also we're representing Palestinians. We are still speaking for Palestinians if we're not Palestinian. And so how we approach things and how we amplify, we have to be careful that we're also not harming our Palestinian comrades either, and that we're doing right by them. So it's really important that we don't want to go for the workers. They're doing what they need to do. And honestly, some of the workers, like, you know, work it from the inside. Like, I've heard some really fun stuff that some of the workers are partaking themselves that are also, you know, participating in their own ways. And even in some of the same ways that we participate but they're just doing it on the inside. And it makes me laugh and I love it. And I'm happy that people are finding ways to express themselves and to call it out where it needs to be called out.
I love that. By the way, my mom had this Indigo gift card around the holidays. We don't remember when she got it, but she had it and she was like, okay, I know there's a boycott. What do I do? I'm like, you go use that. Because right now they have your $100. So for clarification, if you have a gift card, you spend that and not one penny. You know, like, I don't know how you do that. She tried her best. I don't know what she ended up leaving money on the card or spending a couple bucks in the store. But she came to me for clearance first. And I was like, no, they're not keeping your money.
And we want to make sure that when you use those books or those gift cards, use them to purchase Palestinian authors. Specifically, that's because at the end of the day, like, the authors are getting some money. So if you're going to be giving Indigo some of that money, or if you're going to use that money, at least, you know, some of that gift card money is going to Palestinian authors. So we really encourage that. At the end of the day, authors don't get to decide where their books are distributed. So that's another thing that we want to make sure we encourage folks not to shit on authors who have their books there. Maybe, you know, encouraging them not to have signings there would be great. They can definitely talk to their publishers about doing their signings or their readings at other like independent bookstores. But certainly we want folks to think about the fact that, like, because authors don't decide, you will see, you know, Eve Engler's book on the shelves there. You will see Indigenous books. You will see what was it? Saeed Tibi's was on the top 100 books of 2025, which was kind of comical, but like, he himself is a supporter of the campaign. So just thinking about those types of things, we want to make sure that we are targeting the right groups. And really at the end of the day, it's Indigo. And educating folks on why Indigo is a problem.
You talked about keeping the door open and bringing as many people into the campaign as possible. You are very deliberate with your language. The campaign is very deliberate with its language to that end. Sometimes you get criticized for it as well. Let's talk about that a little bit, the kind of word choices that you make, and like weigh the cost benefit a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think one of the things we have to remember is that as much as we want to tear down the system, we still live in the system, and we can't overnight decide, you know, it's not going to change. So we have to consider the mediums that we're using and the way that people consume information. And so that's why we chose to take a bit of a more marketing type approach to things. So we use their brands. They're similar to their branding. We use their colors. And really, we mimic them. It's sort of a mockery, right? And that's actually the counter to the copyright argument, is that actually in the end, we are, it's our right to do that. It's not copyright infringement if we are critiquing. That being said, so in that idea of like, we're using social media, so having these sort of like marketing type style graphics, things that are easy to consume, easy to grab, easy to share, is one of the things. And one of the other things that we like to do is we like to, I'm really grateful for some of these creators. There's been some really great ones that have discussed, you know, like language and how we engage with groups. And if we think about it from, you know, whether we're in a political sphere or we're in a marketing sphere, like there are people that are going to be decided, right, one way or another. And there's always that middle group that we need to appeal to. And so one of the things we've considered is the fact that we don't want to create barriers. So some of the feedback as we were creating content, we were noticing people kept asking, what does IOF mean? Or like IOF, it was a barrier. We were finding that people were getting stuck on it and we were having to explain it or spell it out. So we've adjusted our language to Israeli military instead of IOF. Yeah.
So just for folks who are wondering, what is she talking about? So do you want to explain the difference between IOF, so IOF and IDF?
Absolutely. So IOF is the Israeli Occupation Force versus the Israeli Defense Force. The common critique, what are they defending? They're actually occupying or offending. So, you know, depending on who you are, you might say Israeli Occupation Force, Israeli Defense Force. The idea being a mockery of their language. And it's something, you know, that counter protesters or, you know, anti or pro Palestinian, I should say, activists, like what the language that we'll use to highlight the occupation component of Israel. But using abbreviations was a barrier. The other thing is people get twitchy when you start, or uncomfortable, squirmy when you start talking about, when you start using words like Zionist or Jewish, and because of the conflation and the messiness that that Hasbaras have done a fairly good job up to this point in doing, we try and stay away from that language. There are moments where it calls for it, but overall, we try and stay away from the language just to create accessibility, to highlight the fact that this campaign is not about an identity. This campaign is about, you can sub her out for anything. At the end of the day, you've got a billionaire using our charity system to get a tax break to send money to a foreign military, and that foreign military is committing genocide. Like, that is the bare bones of it. And so by not using certain types of language, we can help keep that door open and keep that conversation going, because we just find that when you start using that link, people tend to just kind of turn off or they turn away. I mean, I had one woman at an action in the city that I live in. We were outside at the last day of action, and she came up to us and started asking us questions. And she was like, how do you even know this? How do you even know it's $200 million or whatever, $185 million, right? And I was like, well, the CRA publishes, it's a charity, it's a registered charity. It's listed on their website, like on the CRA website, you know, there's lots of very public information about how much money the Reisman Schwartz Foundation sends to Hesed Foundation. And she goes, yeah, well, how do you even know that Hesed even does this? I was like, it's literally on their website. And so everybody's
they
really
about it. That's how we know.
The only thing they did was change it to Hebrew after we launched, So they took away the English option, but hello, Google Translate and Wayback Machine. Like, there's many ways to see exactly what they're doing, and they didn't change their Canada help. Like, it's just the attempts to obfuscate, but also in this very sloppy way is quite funny. But that being said, like, the facts stand for themselves. We don't need to shove like counter narrative down their throat. We can just use the facts, and the facts speak for themselves. And people, like, they say it themselves. And I and the joke is, you know, Indiegogo kills kids, they say it themselves. But, I mean, they own the domain, for goodness sake. Like, what else do you need? They own the domain that says Indiegogo kills kids. So what do you want?
I completely understand what you're talking about in terms of like trying to appeal to as many people. And we know definitely some words are triggers, but I do want to acknowledge there that it's not so much imposing an ideology, but refusing to legitimize another. So some people will take the conscious choice, and we talked about this before we recorded again. I try in my writing not to use Israel, the word Israel. It legitimizes the state for some, right? Using that language helps solidify the right for that to even exist the way that it does, right? As an occupation, an illegal occupation, right? So even IOF for some is a problem because it's still a bit of a form of legitimization. But yeah, it's about kind of being defiant, because there's a lot of normalization that goes around simply that state of Israel, right? Whereas recognizing Palestine is some sort of question, but recognizing this illegal occupation as having a right to exist is just unquestionable now. It's right. It's just standard. So I do understand some of the pushback that you receive for not using the word Zionist and instead using the word Israel. But, you know, I do appreciate the explainer there. And some campaigns serve different purposes, right? And everyone's kind of got to decide how they can be as effective as possible while walking this very difficult line that we're all just kind of trying to figure out. So I wanted to give you space to definitely talk about that. And that's choices that some people might make even when they're not talking about Palestine, when they're talking about landlords or, you know, the language that they might try to use to either, maybe you think it fires some people up, maybe it's turning more people away. And that measurement is like hard to tell as well, but it's interesting to hear a marketing approach. What's coming up? Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. No, that's okay. I think that's a really great, thank you for framing that, because at the end of the day, we want people to step into it. We can radicalize them once they're here, but we need them in at the end of the day. Right. So we need to use whatever entry point we can. And it's already not comfortable for people. So why not? I don't want to say why not be a soft landing, because I don't think that's what we are. But, you know, why not just remove barriers and people come along, people radicalize and they change their tune as they learn more. I love that.
What's next for the campaign? I read, you know, I think it was, I'm so bad with acronyms. Maybe it's in my notes. CJPME had a quick fact sheet that I'll link, a bunch of resources in the show notes, folks, so you can know exactly where she gets these numbers from, right? But one of the things that they had 3 points to, when will this boycott stop? And they just seemed never. Like that.
Yeah. I it felt feels like that, right?
Do they need to hit all those points? It was like, you know, the Reisman Schwartz Foundation stops donating to Hesek, but they founded it. The occupation ends. There was another one there, but like for you in the campaign, what is the end goal?
I think it depends who you ask. I think people have different motivators. I think, you know, we have our campaign goals stated explicitly on our website. We want Indiegogo or Heather Reisman to stop funding the Hesek Foundation, for them to either step down as CEO and completely divest from Indiegogo, like separate themselves completely from the organization. And, you know, so, and to have the CRA revoke the HESEG's charity status. So these are our goals, campaign goals, and we're pushing in the ways that we can. So right now, for example, there is a petition that's out. You will have to link the number because I always get all the numbers jumbled together, but that Heather McPherson is sponsoring, to calling on the government to investigate IOF soldiers Canadians that have served in the Israeli military specifically, and calling for the investigation of HESEG as well specifically. So thank you to the person who put in that petition. So that's, last I checked, it might be a little bit dated, this number, it was around 9,000 signatures. And the petition closes in April. So of course we want to be pushing that, and we want to be pushing folks to be chatting to their MPs and telling them that this is important. You know, we've been also criticized because we have a series called Heather's Picks, which highlights or showcases, if you will, the wonderful achievements of the Canadians who are Canadian lone soldiers. So we love to showcase that they participated. They're Canadians. And some have participated in Gaza. So, you know, we've posted that online, and that comes from the Maples Find IDF soldier website. We don't go digging. We haven't found anything outside of that. Everything is publicly available. So I think it's really important that we are also focusing on the fact that they walk amongst us. They're business owners, they're food truck owners, they're restaurant owners, they're, you know, your gym, there's like a, you know, Krav Maga crap that's around. Like, they walk amongst us, and we are allowing it. We are allowing people who have served in a foreign military, who have literally murdered children, walk amongst us. And we really need to be looking into that. And so that's another push. We want to keep mobilizing people to organize actions in their own way, whether, you know, they're out there flyering. We have flyers and such on our website, so folks can download some stuff and print whatever works for them, and make sure that they're out there letting people know, like, the issues with Indigo. You don't have to stand in front of an Indigo to educate about Indigo. That's the other great thing. And there's also themselves as people, like, you can just not shop at Indigo. There's lots of great indie bookstores on our website. We partnered with Watermelon Maps to specifically, they have like a boycott Indigo filter, like, on their website specifically, which is linked on our website as well, that allows you to see bookstores that have that are like watermelon friendly or Palestine friendly, apartheid free BC, or like the apartheid free movement has bookstores or businesses across the country, because they don't just sell books, they sell like all sorts of random shit, like homeware and sex toys even, and it's like a lot of other Indigo. yeah
you know, Squishimals, they sell Squishimals. Yeah. Those are made by a company based in the occupation.
Blah. Okay, good to know.
Yeah, I know. But we bought this one beforehand.
So, you know, sometimes you just, when you know better, you do better, right? Like, we can't be perfect, and like, perfection shouldn't be the goal. You know, the goal is to just continuously improve. And, you know, I can't stop. There's certain things in my home when we go to the grocery store, I do the best I can at the end of the day, and we should all be doing what we can. And one way we can do is, there's lots of online other options that are not Amazon or Indigo that you can buy books at. And we've listed some of those on our website and our socials. So there's lots of different ways that you can participate in the campaign without, even if you don't want to host throw a day red of paint. Action. or throw red paint, or like, you know.
We have entry level.
Yeah, we have phases, you know, like, you don't have to, like, we will radicalize you, but you don't have to get there. Shh, don't, right don't. Away.
No, I very much appreciate coming on the show to explain the madness to the methodology and whatnot. We will, folks, really do jump into the show notes. You should always go into the show notes, but there's always a call to action. So we'll link you to the petition. We'll link you to their website, the portal that gives you posters that you can print out yourself so that you can jump right into this campaign if you want. And as well as all the kind of supporting documentation so that when someone randomly asks, how do you know this? You've got the receipts already with you. But I very much appreciate this. It's a slog, right? Like it taking criticisms from both sides and just trying to do what we can do within the realm that's available to us, right? And every point of pressure is a valid one, I think, at this point, right? Like, it's been all hands on deck. Everyone has kind of looked to the institutions around them. And I agree with you. I think this is one of these kind of Canadian institutions, like, you know, maybe not official. It's not our courts. It's not our schools. It's not, but we hold it in very high regard, and it needs to be very taken down personal. A few notches, knowing what we know now, right, about the foundation and its role in the genocide.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for letting us talk about it. I think it's not very often that we get this opportunity, so I really appreciate you. You sharing it with your audience.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you came to the right place. Thank you.
That is a wrap on another episode of Blueprints of Disruption. Thank you for joining us. Also, a very big thank you to the producer of our show, Santiago Helu Quintero. Blueprints of Disruption is an independent production operated cooperatively. You can follow us on Twitter at BP of Disruption. If you'd like to help us continue disrupting the status quo, please share our content, and if you have the means, consider becoming a patron. Not only does our support come from the progressive community, so does our content. So reach out to us and let us know what or who we should be amplifying. So until next time, keep disrupting.